Do you get super animated, or are you pretty much going to stay there?
I'm not going to get crazy.
Okay. Yeah. Hi, welcome to the Briones Pickleball Podcast. In today's episode, we have a very special guest from across the country, I think, actually, and we'll get into that. He's a content creator, trick shot king in my book, and that is Shea Underwood.
Hey, let's go, Jordan. I feel like I'm in the presence of greatness right now, man. I've watched so many of your videos, and to be here in person is such an honor, man.
Thanks, man. Yeah, we met probably, or we talked not too long ago, maybe a year or two ago. Or
I've probably been commenting on your YouTube videos for several years, I would imagine. But yeah, we had a conversation on the phone not too long ago, and then I finally met you in person at MLP this past weekend.
Yeah, yeah. So it's really good to have Shea here. If you don't know him, you probably have seen a lot of his stuff, or you will see a lot of his stuff. He's really popular on TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube. He has a YouTube channel. We'll get into that. So we're in the same space, making content. Yeah, Shea, why don't you tell me, or tell the viewers and listeners a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, so I am 24-year-old pickleball player, about to turn 25. The big 25, finally get that young driver fee off my rental car. Agreements, you know,
money, saving money. Let's go.
Any way possible. So yeah, I'm a full-time content creator. I just quit my job as an engineer about 8 months ago to pursue pickleball content full-time, pursue the training, going pro full-time. So that's been quite the journey. But before that, in a past life, I grew up playing soccer and then eventually fell my way into playing football, played at a Division I school called Georgia Tech as a kicker and a punter.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. So I had a really good time there, learned a lot of lessons, and then finally found my way to pickleball, and now here we are.
Cool, man. So why don't you just tell that experience? Everyone has their own, right, about how they got into the game. So how was yours?
Yeah, yeah. Mine was interesting. I assume they're all kind of very similar. We all have like an athletic background. We hear about this new sport. We go out to try it. We fall in love with it immediately. And that's very similar to my own. So a local dentist actually introduced me to pickleball. He brought me out to the courts. And dude, just immediately hearing like the sound of the ball, something just scratched an itch in my brain and I wanted more of it. And then what really happens for most people is they go out and they get beat by somebody that's much older than them that has no business beating them in an athletic endeavor.
Yeah.
And that just scratched another itch in my brain that was like, all right, I've got to get better at this sport because I can't have that happen ever again.
Yeah, yeah. So that is what happened. There was like older lady, older guy, or?
Yeah, I'm like, she can never beat me again. And then it kept happening for the next year.
Wow. Okay. So you said a dentist introduced you. Like you're just getting a root canal or something, and this guy's like, you know.
Yeah. Well, so I'm from a kind of a small town, so we all know each other.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. So this dentist is actually the father of one of my really good friends who I grew up playing sports with. Yeah. And so he just knew, like, because him and or his son and I were such good friends and played sports together, we would probably enjoy pickleball. Yeah. So he brought us out, gave me the nice thick special paddle.
Okay, you know, what paddle was that?
Oh, I don't know the very first paddle that he gave me.
But it wasn't the wooden one, right?
No. The first one I used, I want to say, I can't even remember the name, but it was like an Ace pickleball paddle or something.
Okay.
It's like probably like $30 from Walmart or something. Yeah, yeah.
Cool, man.
Yeah, are you big into paddles?
What do you mean, like testing a lot of them out?
Yeah, okay, so here's an example. So I've been living with Will and Chris. So Will, Pickleball Will, and Chris Olson from the Pickleball Studio for the past like week and a half.
Yeah, we just had them on the podcast.
Yeah, and, yeah. So they're probably familiar with them, but it's crazy, man. Like literally any time of the day, 5 o'clock in the morning, 6 o'clock in the morning, 6:30, they're talking about paddles. That's all they talk about.
Yeah.
I make fun for it. But
yeah, it's funny. I was talking to them yesterday, and I was like, you know, I was asking Chris from Pickleball Studio specifically, like, do you like doing this? Or like, and then they were just kind of telling me like, yeah, first thing that like, that's all he thinks about is like paddles. Like, wow. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so funny. Like hearing them meet other people at tournaments, the conversation always like evolves into, hey, what paddle do you use?
Yeah.
Like, do you like it?
No, it's funny, dude. Yeah. So, real quick, I've never actually met a player that's came from like Division I football.
Yeah.
So that's pretty high level. And you said you were a kicker.
Yes.
Wow. And did you play like all 4 years? Like how did that?
Yeah, so I played 3 years. I had quite the situation there. So I backed up Harrison Bucker, who is now the kicker for the Kansas City Chiefs.
currently?
Yeah, currently. Wow. Just doing really, really well there. And then I also backed up. So Harrison Butker was the kicker. I decided, all right, I got to be a punter now, you know, give myself a chance to get on the field. And then my second year, they brought in Presley Harvin, who was the number one punter of the nation, and now he's with the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Okay, so sorry, I don't follow football that much, but punters and kickers, they alternate or they do both jobs?
Yeah, usually they're specific to one, but occasionally people do both, and I was one person that did both. Okay. And yeah, so I just knew how to do both. I was good at both. Wow. And yeah, eventually didn't really find my way to the field that much in D1.
Okay.
But had the chance to back up some really legendary players. And
wow, dude.
Yeah. So I was playing football for 3 years there. And then, yeah, once I got rid of that, I left that journey. I knew I needed something to fill the void.
Yeah.
And so that's whenever the dentist introduced me to pickleball. Yeah. And from then, man, I've just been on that grind ever since.
Yeah. Well, backing those guys up, though, I mean, what was your, I'm assuming your goal was to go pro, right? Or no?
Yeah. I mean, that may have been like what I said, front facing, but in the back of my mind, I just knew that I wasn't going pro.
Really?
Okay. Like it was something that would require a level of dedication that I just wasn't ready to put into it at that time. You know, there were so many other elements of life that were pulling on me. So
yeah.
I got to college. I was just getting wrecked by school. Very, very difficult school. I was just not prepared for that well. And then joined a fraternity as well. So I had the social aspect, had the academic aspect, and then had the sports aspect. And one of them had to suffer, and that was the sports for me.
Okay.
Yeah.
I know this is a pickleball podcast, but talking about the kicking real quick, because we can talk about a few things. You know, like I said, I follow a little bit of football. You know, when you're playing other positions and stuff, there's a lot going on, right? Like defense, strategy, plays, and things like that. As a kicker, like to go at that high of a level to the NFL, is that... I mean, what do you have to practice? Not saying that's not much, but besides kicking, like, is there a lot more to go into it than that?
Yeah, so much really? More. So, I mean, when you think about it, there are probably 32 kickers in the entire world that have the ability to play in the NFL at any given time.
Yeah.
Because most NFL teams, they don't carry a backup on their team. So 32 people that live in the United States that play NFL are kickers, and that's it. That's all you get.
Wait, what happens if they get hurt then? Most
usually like the punter will step in and
there'll be someone
on the team who has some sort of kicking experience that can fill in. But to get to the most premier level, I mean, you have to be very, very, first of all, mentally sound. So it's, you know, if you miss a kick, then you just can't be thinking about it for the rest of the day. You got to completely get over that immediately and get right back out to the field and kick off, or, you know, make the next field goal. So there's a lot of mental aspects of it that translate very well to pickleball for me.
I'm sure it does.
You know, like, you know, you miss a serve where you return a ball into the net. It's like, all right, well, that sucked, but let's just try to figure out how to not do that again.
Yeah.
And immediately get over that versus sulking on it for a while.
Yeah, I know.
And then, just the training, because it's such a specific motion. I mean, it's the same exact steps every single time. It's the same motion with your leg, the same follow through. And then you go to hit a third shot drop. Mm-hmm. Okay, what are we doing here now? If the ball is down here at my right foot, it's the same exact motion, the same exact steps, the same exact follow through.
Yeah.
So it's a lot of repetition, and it does translate very well for me.
No, that's really good. How many kicks did you have to... So at the peak of your training, right? I'm sure you're doing strength training, flexibility. I don't know. But how many kicks are you getting off a day?
Roughly 100. Yeah, probably around 100.
Oh, so not like 2,000, not something crazy.
No, and some people do, and you know, maybe that's what separated them from me, and it probably was, but it's just such an intense motion. Like, you're putting every ounce of effort into kicking that ball. It'd be like going out and hitting 150 overheads and just trying to completely crush the ball over and over and over again. You know, it takes a lot of effort out of you. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So just power wise, I mean, I know, like, if you're kicking a field goal, you have to be super accurate, but like depth wise, you compared to, you said that guy, on the
Harrison,
Harrison, he's actually going to Super Bowl, right?
I think so. I honestly, dude, since finding pickleball, I've stopped pickleball. Funny enough,
I think his Super Bowl is happening.
They're
a couple
definitely
weeks.
Still in it. I'm pretty confident. Yeah,
but anyways, like depth wise or power wise, was it a big gap between him and you, or like yardage? Like
yeah, definitely. I mean, he was just a level above, no question. So an example would be like on a kickoff, I would kick it 60 yards.
Okay,
he would kick it 75 or 80 or 85.
Okay,
yeah, I mean, it's just a different level. So different level, and then the punter, same thing. I would kick it like 50 yards with a 4.8 seconds of hang time.
Got it.
He would kick it 60 with like a 5.5 seconds of hang time, which is huge difference when you're talking like, you know, getting to the next level. You got to be there. And I just wasn't there, and they were.
Hey, that that depth and hang time has a lot to do with pickleball returns, huh?
Yeah, it does. Like giving yourself time to get up to the net.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've never actually measure the hang time on a return, but that's a big deal.
Yeah, it's a weird dynamic because if you do the I think it's like the chip and run strategy where you hit it super high and then come into the net, like they're going to have a good chance of striking a drive at you from a higher position.
Yeah.
But then also if you hit it very low, like a slice return, you have less time to get to the net.
Yeah.
But they're attacking from a worse position. So there's a balance there, and I don't really know what that is. And maybe you as the pickleball instructor, you might have a better idea of what's optimal there.
Yeah. I do a little bit of both, but so let's just get to maybe some content creation or how you, so you met the dentist.
Yeah.
You started playing pickleball and you started to enjoy it. How did your kicking skills, or let's just call it football skills, transfer? Is there anything remotely like close, like positional wise, technique wise, or anything that you think did like helped a lot?
Yeah. You know, what's funny is that another kind of sport endeavor that I went into that I don't really talk about too much is this game called Rocket League.
What is that?
So it's a game that you play on like a PlayStation or an Xbox or your PC.
Oh, okay.
And I think it's the most similar to a real sport that you can find in the gaming world because all of your inputs like actually directly correlate to what happens on the screen. So it basically what it is it's soccer, but with cars, then they fly. All that is to say,
wait a minute, soccer with cars.
Yeah. Soccer with cars, but the cars can like fly. They can like fly around.
Okay, I don't get it. So you're kicking cars, or
there's like three cars on the field on your side, three on your side, and there's a ball in the middle.
Okay.
And there's this whole pitch. There's a goal over here, a goal over here, and we're just trying to get the ball into your net. You're trying to get the ball into our net.
By like driving and kicking.
By driving into it. But there's like a whole skill ceiling. Anyways, what I'm getting to is it requires so much communication to play at a very, very high level because you have to know where everybody is at every given time. Hmm. And so I find that on the pickleball court, I can communicate much better than a lot of people.
Okay.
Just from having experience in team sports specifically and realizing the effectiveness of effective communication and letting your partner know where you are at any given time and trying to communicate with them what you're about to do. So an example is like on a third shot, I'm more likely than most people to be like, yo, hitting this soft, hitting this hard in the middle of my shot, so they know what's about to happen.
Oh really?
Yeah.
I think I've ran into a few experiences like that, but I don't see that often.
Yeah.
So like you're like, if I was playing with you, drops, like you're on the, let's say you're on the odd side.
Yeah.
Returns in the middle. You're hitting that. You're taking it, and you'll say you're kind of dropping or driving.
Yeah. So I'll be like, I got, or like mine, me, and then like soft, hard. So you know if it's a soft shot or a hard shot.
Oh, okay.
I'll even tell you like I'm going like soft to the right, soft to the left, hard right, hard left.
Wow. You even get that detailed?
Yeah. Because it's really important for you to know that, because that whatever I'm about to do directly influences where you should be.
For sure.
And at a high level, I mean, I don't know if people are actually doing that, but they should be, right?
It's really interesting. So from what I study, I don't think top players go that in depth, but that's really interesting. We'll see how, I don't know, maybe that's going there. I think those guys play so much that they kind of know, but I don't think that's bad to do. I think that's kind of cool, actually.
Yeah. You know what I have seen, though, is on return specifically with the hand signals behind the back. So traditionally, like a closed fist is stay for your partner.
Yeah.
Open fist is switch. I've also seen people like point different directions.
Mm-hmm. Where they're going
to
go.
I think that, I don't know if it means,
oh,
I think they're telling the person returning where they want them to return it. I think so.
Okay. Could be that, or maybe where they're going to go with that first ball.
Yeah. You know? I don't know, but whatever it is, it's some, you know, level of communication they've established with their partner that they have an edge on the opposing team because they can communicate more effectively.
Yeah. Well, what I tell a lot of my students that I work with is there's nothing wrong, or you can't get in trouble with over communication, right? It's usually under.
Yeah.
And like kind of like your example there, like, you know, if I played some games with you and you did that, it'd be, you know, kind of interesting at first, but it'd probably be super helpful. And then I know exactly what you're doing. So
yeah,
I think that's kind of cool.
Yeah, absolutely. So I played with this guy in Atlanta named Danny Werfel, who I'm sure the audience is familiar with. He was like a Heisman Trophy winner, played for the Florida Gators. but he's very into communication as well. And so we've like joked about, you know, if we play a tournament together, we're going to have like red, blue, green, yellow, like words that we can say that mean different things while we're at the kitchen to like, hey, let's switch here. Like, let's speed up. I'm about to speed up. I'm about to like fake a speed up or whatever, you know, I'm about to lob.
That's not bad. Maybe like at a high level, like red or blue, like calling out a color, whatever.
Yeah.
And that means, dude, that can mean like attack cross court left hip.
Yeah.
Across down the line right hip.
Like,
you know,
I'm about to set you up for an Ernie, like hard cross court ding, quad ATP here.
That'd be actually interesting.
Yeah, there's some good stuff there, man, that people just haven't really gotten into yet, I don't think.
Yeah.
You know, I posted this funny video, and it's kind of like half a joke, half real, where it's a pickleball screen.
Yeah, I saw that. It's actually, you guys go check that out. How can they find it? Just on YouTube?
Just pickleball. Type in like Shea Underwood, or my name's Shea, S-H-E-A. You can find it pretty much any platform, like pickleball screen.
Yeah, it was pretty interesting.
You know, it's like kind of a joke because I knew it would get views because that's my job, right? But at the same time, like there is a whole nother level there that people just haven't figured out yet. Like,
if I do
hop in front of you and hide the ball from my opponent, like there's a good chance that we can find something there that gives us an edge.
Oh, no, it's really cool. And by the way, going back to that pickleball screen, so it's kind of like, so just as an example, I think you had a few different kinds of screens.
Yeah.
But so basically, let's say you're dinking at the kitchen line, okay, and your partner is about to take that ball, it's traveling as a dink to him, and then you can like the ones one of the ones I saw, you run in front of your partner, kind of block the view like with your body, and then as soon as he hits it, you can duck or get out the way. So just rules wise, I'm sure that you've gotten a lot of questions. Can that even be legal, or that's definitely distraction, or it's gray area?
It's gray area. And the reason why it is a gray area is because, okay, well, let's establish one thing first of all.
Yeah.
If you hit a really good dink to me, there's no chance I have time to get in front of you.
Yeah, no. It's more of a dead dink.
What usually happens is like, a ball that someone's resetting from transition, and they pop it up very high, and it lands shallow.
Okay.
Now you have the chance to smash it or drop it short.
Yeah.
Hop in front of you, so you don't know. But here's why I think it can also not be a distraction, because even if I hop in front of you, I can still take the ball myself.
Yeah.
So I can hop in front of you, shielding you from the part or from the opponent. But then at the last second, I take the ball.
No, dude, I'm all for it, dude. But as we saw, like at the MLP this weekend, I mean, we got distraction calls.
There was a distraction call on James, but it was overturned.
Yeah.
It wasn't actually a distraction or a hindrance.
Yeah, so getting back to that, this one guy, split step. If you don't know what a split step is, then you should probably start learning it. But, you know, it's coming in, stopping, making sure you're set. We teach that in a lot of our videos. But anyways, he hit a pretty aggressive one, which honestly looked like a routine one to me. Like, it got called as a distract or just – whatever it was, distraction. I'm glad it got overturned, but I don't see anything like, you know, the screening. That's the same thing as like poaching to me. I think it would be pretty cool to see it.
Yeah, there's this, who knows what's going to happen in the future, but my pickleball hot take is I think that they should let the crowd get involved more, let people distract people. I mean, I think you've probably seen the clips of Riley Newman where he's not getting the ball for an extended period of time, and he's like waving his hands around.
Yeah. Well, Kyle Yates probably started that.
Yeah. Oh, did he?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, he's been around longer, and he used to – I remember he used to, like, turn around, fake like he's walking off the court. Like, there's just some fun stuff. But all that, I think that's fair game.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, there's a level of gamesmanship there that at some point it goes from, like, being this funny thing you do to this is actually really effective.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, cool, man. So, yeah, you started playing pickleball. And then real quick, like what level would you say that you started? Because it's funny, I invite and I see a lot of people play from higher levels other sports. Sometimes it comes super natural because you didn't really have any racket background. Like how fast? Because right now you're like playing at a 5-0 level.
Yeah.
Or pro, right?
Yeah, 5-0 to pro somewhere in there.
So how long, like where did you start? What was your journey like from, let's say, you could tell us where you think you started 3.03.5 to like to 4.05? Like, what was your journey?
So I think like first day on the court, what probably happened was I showed up and I didn't know anything, how to keep score. Mm-hmm. So 2.05 right off the bat. But by the end of that first day, 3.05, right? Because you have the athletic ability, you can hit shots, but it's just like, okay, where should I be? How do I keep score? What are the rules?
Yeah.
And quickly you level up.
And you're trying, I mean, as a football player, were you just trying to like kill everything? or not really?
Well, so I had some like ping pong experience. Like I understand games like this.
Yeah.
At some level, at least the 3-5 level, you know. So I wasn't just trying to crush everything, but this is different than any other sport. Like how the ball interacts with your paddle, mm-hmm. how you actually hit the ball. Like it's a small court, and so at first it feels like you can't hit the ball hard. It's impossible because it always goes out or always goes into the net.
Yeah.
But then the second you learn about topspin, how to effectively like manipulate the ball.
Yeah.
Then you can start cranking a little bit harder. You get a better paddle. That helps. So yeah, probably first day. 2-5 into the first day, 3-5, and then about a year from 3-5 to 4-5.
Okay.
Yeah, and then
so let's quickly talk about that, because with a lot of our viewers and listeners, they're tuning in to get better at the game. That's what we do here at Briona's Pickleball. From that 3-5 to that 4-5 is a big gap, and a lot of I would say maybe 70-90% of our listeners and followers are around that range. Sure. And they're trying to get to 4.0, 4.5 plus. You said for you, it took about a year.
Yeah.
So for others, it could take longer, shorter, but what are some things that you can think of that you changed, and how did you actually, like, what did you have to work on to get there?
Yeah. So I would say the biggest thing for me to get from 3.5 to 4.5, it's one very specific thing. And that is learning that it's okay to hit a high ball in like a third shot drop situation, as long as you can get really good at resetting from transition. So the second that I learned that, okay, my third shots don't have to be perfect, well, that takes me from hitting 80% into the net or whatever it was to like, okay, now I hit 5% into the net, but the other 50 or 60% now go really high. So I got to get good at resetting and playing good defense and then waiting for that good ball that goes over the net so I can be patient and moving forward. So that probably jumped me from like 3-5 to 4-0, just playing better defense, being more patient, learning how to properly reset balls and dialing that in. And then from 4-0 to 4-5, just learning how to start effectively attacking people.
Yeah.
So finding the rolls, generating topspin off of like weird situations, where to aim the shots at the shoulders, at the hips. And then more importantly, it's like this roll doesn't win me the point. It's the follow-up.
Yeah.
You know, so you roll and you start developing patterns there. So that was really what took me to the next level. And then I did take a camp with Tyson McGuffin. And at that camp, John Sperling was there. John Sperling is a senior pro pickleball player, very, very smart. Yeah. And he started teaching me about different systems in pickleball.
Okay.
So attacking systems. So like me and you, if we're playing another team, how do we go about winning our points? Like, where do we get our points from? And so I was starting to think about, how do I actually win a point?
Yeah.
And like, how do I set up that position to let me win a point? Yeah. That took my game to the next level.
No, that's cool. So speaking about systems, let's give an example of one, like if you can, you know, kind of.
Yeah, absolutely. So the most common one is, well, the first thing we do is on our drop, we hit it to the person on, I guess it's the onside. I don't know the tennis even onside, but.
Yeah. So cross court.
Yeah, cross court to this person's backhand over here, right? And just see if they have any offense there at all.
Got it.
If they don't have offense, we just go there all day, because we know they can't hurt us.
Yeah.
And then we keep, in the dinky situations or wherever we are on the court, it's 2-1 now. And the one person, it's not just one person, it's that one person's backhand.
Yeah.
So we just keep dialing in, you know, hitting balls to that person's backhand over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. And slowly we start to slide. Getting closer to that person's backhand, anticipating a shot down the line that can hit for an Ernie where they pop it up. Or what tends to happen is in that situation, like a 3-5 level, 4-0 level, their backhand, they're going to go cross court, but they can't hit sharp angles yet. So they hit it kind of high to the middle.
Yeah.
And then the person on the left steps in, takes it out of the air, and win the point.
Yeah.
So that's the most obvious basic system.
Yeah.
It's just to find their backhand, expose it, and then wait for them to pop it up, put it away.
No, that's really good, man. That's really good. So you started playing, you progressed really, really quickly in your game, in your level. So let's talk about content creation now, because that's you know, a big part of why or what brings us together. So how did you get into that space? YouTube, TikTok, Instagram, all that stuff. And did you have any previous experience with social media or content creation
before? Yeah, I did. I had some experience with it. So there's this. Trying to get recruited for football is a very weird area of life.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so what happened was I was, you know, doing a lot of kicks and punts in game, but getting your name out there is very difficult. And we're talking like this is 2012 to like 2015.
Yeah, so these are, you're talking about kind of like recruit videos.
Yeah.
Right? So get to, like in high school, get coaches and see how your skills and stuff.
So I had to figure out how to take all these clips that were filmed very poorly and put them into this video that highlights me and shows what I'm capable of.
Dude, were you doing trick shot? Were you doing trick shots?
No, well, not really. I wasn't, but people I was like, were. Wow, dude. Yeah, there's this guy called Chainsaw Lennon. And I know you've seen this stuff, but you don't know who he is probably. But he does these onside kicks. He's like 40 and like...
Oh, okay.
He does onside kicks like into hoops and into like trash bins, stuff like that. So I met him at a camp once.
Okay.
And that got me kind of into the trick shot thing. But Dude Perfect's definitely the inspiration there.
Okay, yeah.
Brody Smith, he was like the Frisbee guy, still does it. But yeah, so I had to make videos to get recruited, and that just sparked the interest there. And then like I kind of was a gamer beforehand, so I made some Call of Duty videos. I've always wanted to make videos, and the reason why is because when I'm thinking about like my impact or my legacy, like long term, the only thing that's really permanent is just some sort of video. And then once I'm gone, you know, if people want to look into my life, I could write a book or I can make a video. And they can see things that I've learned and I can teach people going forward. So I've always had some like level of, I got to start making videos just to document my life and share my experiences.
That's cool, man.
So I found pickleball and I played for 8 months and I was like, man, it's time. Got to start making videos. So the first day, got a GoPro for Christmas, strapped it to my chest, went out to the court.
And what year was this?
This was December of 2020, right?
So You're under, so about 3 years, roughly.
Roughly 3 years,
or less, actually.
I'm working on a video called I Played Pickleball for 1,000 Days. This is what I learned. About 3 years, yeah. Yeah, yeah, so.
Dude, that's a good title.
I know.
I might have to think about that one.
I'm going to try to beat you to it.
Dude, no, you beat me to it, but I'll do another spin. That's good.
It's a really good one, yeah. That's good. Yeah, yeah. Around December 2020, strapped a GoPro to my chest, went out, played a game. And just gave the entire world motion sickness because it's just so unsteady.
So that was your very first one?
Yeah.
Because you know, I didn't look at all your previous one, but your very first video was a GoPro strap.
Just,
that one?
Just a regular 4-0 rec game.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. Well, how many views does that have right now?
Probably like 200.
Okay.
Something like that. Very small.
Okay.
But it's the process, man. Like it's just getting it out there.
Okay.
And you know, I spent a lot of time figuring it out because you put a GoPro on your chest, there's a lot that goes into, okay, I put this thing on my chest, how do I get this to upload to YouTube?
Yeah.
There's a lot of steps in between.
Dude, as people don't know out there, we know exactly how hard it is to get content out, all the processes that it takes. And yeah, it's really tough. But so that was your first video. So what was it called? Shea Underwood Pickleball then? Or
yeah,
no?
It was really? Shea okay. Underwood Road to 5-0. Okay. And I realized I was going to get to 5-0 really fast.
Okay.
So I was like, all right, let's go a little higher. Road to pro. Road to pro.
All right.
So we went road to pro.
Yeah.
And then I made a goal that year to upload one TikTok video. That's all I wanted to do, just upload a TikTok video.
Just one?
Just want to upload one.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, just to see, you know, just to get it going. And I uploaded one. And I was like, oh, that's kind of fun. I like seeing the views because there's this interesting thing on TikTok where you upload a video, the first video you make usually gets a lot of views or like 1,000 views, which is kind of a lot.
Okay.
And I did that for a little bit, and then this World Trick Shot Day came around, and this day in December, I think it's like the first Monday, and I posted a video of me trying to skewer a pickleball. So I put a wooden skewer on one side of the court, I had a bucket of balls on my side of the court, and I just kept hitting serves until I got the pickleball to perfectly land on the skewer.
Yeah, yeah. I thought that was recent. No, that was a while ago then.
Yeah, definitely over a year ago.
So I think I've seen that. Yeah, yeah.
And that one, it got a million views on TikTok. Yeah, and I was like, whoa.
Okay.
There's some potential here.
So where were you serving from?
Just serving from like, you know, one side of the court, left side of the court.
And then, so like basically a skewer is like a needle.
Yeah.
And then you're trying to get one of the freaking holes.
Yeah, well,
land in
two of the holes.
Dude.
It's funny because
so like, how long did that, how many attempts and how long did that one take?
Dude, so the crazy thing is I did it for 2 hours the first day on World Trick Shot Day.
Oh, okay.
And I didn't make it.
Yeah.
And I posted the video. I was like, yo, guys, this is what I'm doing. I did a little voiceover. I kept getting so close, kept taking my phone over.
That's the one that got a million?
I'm going to come back tomorrow and try again. and that video got a million views.
So wait, which one? That one or the other?
The very first one.
Wow. So interesting. So the one that you failed on,
yeah,
you didn't get it, but that's the one that got a million.
Yeah, yeah. And then I kept doing it. Yeah. They got like hundreds of thousands, 50,000, 10,000 when I finally made it.
Yeah.
And it's funny because also on Facebook, similar thing happened. So I did this like trick shot where I hit off a wall, and then I hit off a wall, and then like a desk, and then a wall, then a desk, and a chair, and then a wall, then a desk, and a chair, and then a pot.
Yeah.
And then finally into a cup.
Yeah.
And I made this video where I made it, and it got like 1,000 views. And then I did a video where
you didn't.
I did a video where I did it, and it never went in.
Yeah.
6.8 million.
On TikTok.
Facebook.
On Facebook.
Yeah.
Whoa, dude, that's high.
Yeah.
What's your highest viewed any video right now? Like
so 6.2 on TikTok, million, and then
so Facebook's even more.
I want to say, yeah, you said. I it may be 4. I'd have to check.
Dude, that's
somewhere in there, yeah.
That just goes to show you maybe people like to watch people almost get there or fail. I don't know, dude. That's nuts. That's actually really interesting.
Yeah, it is. There's this weird like I don't know, human behavior thing we could get into, I guess, where it's like, well, I think what really happened for that video was they expected it to go in, and when it didn't, they watched it again to see, okay, maybe this time it'll go in, and then it didn't.
Oh, because it's a loop.
It's a loop, yeah. Maybe this time it'll go in, and then
it didn't. Okay. So, okay.
Yeah.
That might help it out.
Yeah.
Yeah, interesting. Okay, so, but real quick, the strapped GoPro to your chest, and then you did talk about the one on the skewer, but what was in between that, or is that how it just went?
There was like a year in between there.
Yeah. So what videos were in between that and that?
Yeah. So YouTube specifically, I did some more of the POV pickleball stuff.
Okay.
And I realized it wasn't good because it was so unstable.
Yeah.
And I started doing around that time. I played a 4.5 tournament at the Atlanta Open.
Okay.
Dude, I played against 4.5 pickleball. It's me and my partner Mike Hall.
Yeah.
And we played against Gabriel Tardio.
Wow. Okay.
And Gizmo. I can think of Gizmo's first.
Yeah, Gizmo Hall.
Yeah, Gizmo.
So
at 4.5, and they crushed us.
Yeah. So Gabriel Tardio, he's a pro now.
Yeah, he's like one of the top. Yeah, I mean, he's probably like top 20 at least, you know.
20, 30. I mean, he's somewhere in the top.
He's a good pro.
He's in the top. Yeah. Yeah. Wow. So
I made a video called like What I Did Wrong. What I Learned from This 4.5 Tournament, something like that. And just started doing analysis.
Yeah.
And I figured out, what I did wrong, started thinking about like how could I have done better in the situation.
Yeah.
And I did some videos like that. But what really blew me up, and I don't, not that I have a lot of followers or anything now, but what I found most success in was I saw Zane do the chainsaw serve.
Yes.
And I went to YouTube. Yes. I'm like, how do I do this thing? No one
Got
knew.
It.
So yeah, I figured out.
Yeah. So that, that whole chainsaw, now it's banned now, but the whole chainsaw spin serve, that I remember you coming out with that. And how many views did that get?
So I made a video called How to Consistently Ace People in Pickleball.
Okay.
And it was with the chainsaw, and that's like probably it's over 100,000, like 140 or something. Okay. And then that got banned, but before it got banned, I saw Morgan Evans snap.
Yeah.
And I was like, how does he do that? And the only video I could find was like this 360p couple frames a second of him like snapping. I couldn't figure it out. And so I was like, oh, dude, I got to figure out how to do this. And so I did it a completely different way. I watched some cricket videos. I don't know anything about cricket, but watched some cricket videos. And when they throw a ball, like to pitch it or whatever they do, they put it between their middle and index and they like snap it like that to get a lot of spin. Mm-hmm. And so my dad and I just sat down for a day and just over and over and over again.
So, yeah, I've seen your dad in some of the videos. So, what do you live with him?
I do, yeah. Right now, I do.
Okay, so is he part of this whole, like, does he play pickleball? Is he part of this whole trick shot thing? Or,
no,
or do you
I
just
mean,
like,
I,
hey, dad, come try this with me?
Yeah,
or what?
It's just, I love my parents. Like, they're great people. And I just want them to be involved. You know, because it's going back to like the Impact Legacy thing. When they're gone or when I'm gone, it would be cool to look back and see this video that we had together that got a million views where we're just having fun in the basement. Like, throwing a ball to cup or whatever.
Yeah.
So I like to get them involved, and you know, they're camera shy. I don't want to be on camera. I want to make sure I look good. But yeah, it's just fun to have them be a part of it.
Yeah, dude. No, that's really awesome. So trick shots in general, you got it. You know, you started doing that. And so, what does your content kind of look like today? Like, are you still doing trick shot stuff and doing road to pro stuff?
Yeah.
Is it a mix? Like, what's your kind of...
So I view myself as, like, a pickleball entertainer on one side And then like I can also do instructional stuff. And what I really want to get to is just entertainment that impacts people positively.
Cool, man.
So it's things that people love to watch because it's just genuinely enjoyable. But yeah, also the end result is that, wow, like that was really fun and it impacted somebody's life positively.
Yeah.
They feel happy. They're smiling. Everybody that's watching is smiling. I'm smiling because I did a good act.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm going towards. So I did a video in Newport called Surf a Pickleball Win $100.
Yeah, I saw that one.
Yeah, and it's just, dude, like give people a chance to surf, put some stakes in there. Like, yeah, oh, well, you can surf a pickleball, get $20, double or nothing for 40.
Yeah, no, that's cool.
Yeah, so
it's actually, what was that? So for those of you listening out there, he put like tape, the depth on the serve. There was like maybe the first, I don't even know what that box is. Maybe first 10 feet of the serving box, right? They had to get it in, then 15, and then like the last was like 2 feet or 1 foot.
For $20, you had to hit a legal pickleball serve. That's it. Just hit a legal serve.
Oh, just in.
Yeah, you get $20. Yep. Okay, now you have a chance to go double or nothing for $40, but we're going to cut the court in half.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and then, yeah, well, I'll do that. I can do that.
Yeah.
So they did it. And then, all right, now
yeah,
have a chance at $100, but there's this small sliver, like a perfectly deep serve. Can you do it?
Yeah, how much? What? From the baseline, how many feet was it?
To which one?
To like to that last one. You know what I mean? Was it 2 feet or?
Like about that, foot or 2 feet.
But just
a good deep serve, you know?
Yeah, consistently, even for pros, you don't realize how hard to accurately it is to get in, you know, in that last 1 or 2 feet.
Yeah, especially when there's money on the line and cameras pointing at you and you have one chance to do it.
Yeah,
a lot of pressure.
No, that's cool. So I would assume in that, did most people stop at the 40? Because unless I'm really trying to win money, that'd probably be where I'd stop.
Yeah.
What was it?
It was like 50-50. People would stop at 40, be financially smart. And then people would be like, oh, I'm so good at pickleball. Let me try for the 100.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to spoil what happened, but someone may have got it at the end.
Okay.
We did have some appearances by Rob Cassidy and AJ Kohler in there. AJ had just won mixed doubles.
Oh, I saw that.
He came over. It's like, oh, dude, I got to try this. Him and I have made some trick shot videos before in the past together. Yeah. He's just a good dude, man. Very smart, very fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, cool, man. So content, it's like speaking of content ideas, and you know, obviously you have a lot of them. You know, you're expanding kind of your ideas and things like that. What's your process on like coming up with different ideas? How do you go about that?
Yeah. So for me, I had to change the way I think. So once I became a content creator, everything around me becomes content. Anything at any time during your day, there is a potential for you to film it and turn it into something, you know, worthwhile for people to watch. Mm. So everything I view, not everything I see, is like that could be a piece of content. Literally in the Uber over here, I was like, yo, she was listening to a podcast. I'm like, oh, I'm about to go record a podcast. Uh-huh. I always thought it would be cool if an Uber or a Lyft driver just recorded their conversations with, you know, their passenger and made a podcast.
Does that exist?
Probably, but
it should.
Right? Yeah.
That's actually a great idea.
Yeah. So that's just, you know, how I think now is, you know, this thing could be some cool video or this might not be a good video. And then just taking inspiration from other people.
Yeah.
So for example, like the 1,000 days thing or the Serve a Pickleball Win $100. There's this guy named Nick Simmons. He does running videos. Mm. And he now does more like spectacle videos, like do a pull up win $100.
Yeah.
So I just took that from him. Mm. Yeah. Still like an artist, turned it into my own thing for pickleball. And now it's out there in the world.
Oh, that's awesome, man.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to learn more about you, man. So you've taught, you know, you made a lot of videos about instructional content. You've done a lot of stuff trying to get people to get better at pickleball.
Yeah.
When you're looking at someone in my position who is on the cusp of like going pro, I could probably go pro, win a couple games at the lowest level, but I play Riley or Ben, it's just no chance. What are things that I need to be doing to get there? You know, is there something specific? Like, what's the difference? What's the separation? How do we get there?
So you're talking about now kind of 5-0 or high 5-0 to like elite level.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. So there's several things I can think about. And for the, you know, listeners out there, obviously, a lot of you may be an aspiration for you, but most of you it won't. But I think, and I was talking to Pickleball Studio a couple of days ago, you know, from 3-0 to 3-5, 3-5, 4-0, like every half level you go up, you know, it becomes a little bit harder and harder, you know, like 3-0 and 3-5s. You know, they're relatively around the same. Maybe one's a little bit more consistent, a little bit better knowledge of the game. 4-0, 4-5s, you know, 4-5s are going to be a little bit more consistent. They have some different shots and things like that.
Yeah.
You know, from like, now we're talking about 5-0 to, and just speaking numbers wise, 6-0 is the pros, which I think, like, you know, now we're saying even the separation from 6-0s, and I think the top pros, Ben and Riley, they're close to 7, I think, on a duper rating. Is that, I think I'm...
Yeah, no, you're right. It's like 6-7, 6-8, somewhere in there.
So I would just say those top four guys, we'll just take the Johns and maybe Riley and those guys. They just make it to, last year, and it'll be interesting to see what happens this year, but let's just take those top guys versus the crowd. You know, they made it to every championship Sunday pretty much last year in PPA. It really is, I think it's a lot of his mental too, you know, because all the other players, right, that are in the top 20, 30, I would say they have all the shots, you know.
Certainly.
They have all the shots. It's kind of, and again, it's so cliche to say consistency, but when it matters most, they are able to execute every single time. And then you talk about their systems. They have their systems down, locked in with, you know, so Matt and Riley have been playing a whole year now. They know how to beat people, specific teams. They know how to beat the Johns. The Johns know how to beat them. And again, it comes down to execution on that day. But like the systems, the consistency as a team, like you said, I think honestly, that's one of the reasons why you probably they don't need to talk as much, because they're so dialed in and they know exactly like what they're gonna do and, you know, where they're gonna hit, and if they attack they go to this plan and whatever. But yeah, I studied those games a lot, like the highest level. I would say honestly, consistency, sticking with the game plan. You know, it's really tough, I would say, to compete with those guys. Because, I mean, I play at a low pro level, too, you know, around 5-5 to 6. That's probably, like, somewhere in there. But to play those guys, the pressure is high, you know, and they don't make a lot of mistakes. And, you know, I think getting to that level is a little bit tough because you have to try to outperform them. In a way, and you got to take some risks too, because they're so good in routine things, right? The essentials. And you know, this is something that I've heard with some really good commentary, like they do things really, really well, like just the basic things, like transition. Very rarely you're gonna have them struggle to get up. Like they're gonna be up at the line. Now it's 2v2, and you got to beat them in a dink game. Right. So the only way you can, you know, or a speed up game. So that's all it is, unless you're going to lob over him every once in a while. But I had Riley over a couple, you know, a few weeks ago, just drilling. And it just, I've done that a few times. And I could just tell it's just another level. Like he could basically attack almost any ball that I give him. But he doesn't because he's super disciplined. But when he does, it's like, then I'm like, you know, hands battle with Riley, it's like, man, I'm going to be on a losing end, you know, 90% of the time, 95%. So, but also the skills, like I would say those guys' hands, right? I would say are probably one of the top hands, like Matt Wright, counterattacking. It's really, really hard to jam up. You know, Colin is such a good resetter. Ben, you know, resetter and counter attacker. I mean, all those guys just do things really, really well. I don't know if that answers your question. There's probably a lot more I could get into, but that's a base.
Because when I'm looking at it, and let's just look at their ratings, right? So I'm roughly a 5-0. Mm-hmm. They're roughly a 7-0.
Yeah.
It's 2 points, man.
Yeah.
And now I'm looking at, okay, I'm a 5-0. I'm looking at a 3-0. I got them all day.
Yeah.
And how could I tell a 3-0 how to beat me? Like, you just can't. And I'm looking at them like, how do I beat them now?
Yeah. You know what, though? That's a really interesting take. So as a 5-0 to a 3-0, and then as a 7-0 to a 5-0. I think it, you know, I think the gap would be closer.
It certainly is.
I mean, way closer.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's two levels of difference, but it's not like we're missing the shot. So we got the shots. Yeah. It's just something else there.
Yeah, it's that marginal, that very, very marginal stuff. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there's upsets and stuff. I just, you know, if you can attack well, keep your balls down. And that's the thing. And, you know, I talk about a lot how the game has changed. And I think you started how many years ago?
Roughly 3 years ago.
So only three. Okay. So I started 8 years ago.
Okay.
Right. So I've seen huge changes in the game. But just in the past 3 years, there is multiple things I can talk about. But the attacking and the hands is skyrocketed. Right. Players are figuring out, you know, if I can be offensive and win the point, then I'm going to attack. And there's no reason to extend rally, you know, points longer.
Yeah.
I don't think it's a secret here, but I was asking Riley one of the things, like how, you know, some of their strategies against the Johns. And, you know, he basically said, like, statistically, basically, when they have rallies, I think over 10 or 14 dinks, you know, or something like that, they lose a point. I think he said, like, you know, they lose a point 70% or whatever. So, like there's statistics now coming into the game.
Yeah.
So, Riley and Matt, and this is not no secret, you can see them. If they find a mid level ball, they're going to attack it because they're going to, you know, that gives them a better chance to win. And if you see the few times, maybe three or four times they beat the Johns last year, it could be more, but I'm not sure. But if you see those times, they were in a complete offense and things were just going really, really well. They countered well, and it just puts a lot of pressure on the Johns. And then the adjustments we've seen, and you're talking about systems sticking to the same thing, and you know, just talking about finding the back end. You know, not another secret. You see the Johns just going middle,
yeah,
like all day, and you're talking about not hurting you, right? That's the path of least resistance for them. And they'll roll it out to the corners and then try to create some separation and bring them in. But like sticking with that game plan and just being disciplined is what brings, you know, the Johns victory most of the time there. So
yeah,
there's just so much though.
That's really, really good stuff. I want to take it. So you said you've been playing for 8 years, right?
Yeah.
When you think about these past 8 years, is there a moment on the court in a tournament or a rec game where you're like, that was a sick highlight? and can you take us there?
That was a sick highlight.
Like I played out of my mind right there.
Yeah. Gosh.
Or maybe someone played out of their mind against you and you just keep remembering like, how did I not win that point? How did they do that?
Yeah.
Is there something
like that? So those moments are a little bit, you know, they kind of get muddied because there's so much has gone on.
Sure.
But I guess what I can remember is just, you know, everyone figures out when they, you know, or when they hit their first ATP and things like that, or first Ernie, those things are always fun. But for me, I mean, just because I can remember them is tournament wise, like in the past, like the people I've played felt really, you know, good about playing and stuff like that. So I think some of my moments were just some of the goats of the game that I kind of had a chance to play against, and I think I've done fairly well. So I mean, so like when I first, it's really interesting, when I very first started the game, started training, played some 5-0 tournaments here and there, and now I'm with Selkirk. Shout out to Selkirk.
Shout out Selkirk, baby.
Yeah, I really love them. They're a great sponsor. Great. But before that, I was with Engage Pickleball, and what happened is I was playing Kyle Yates, and this is at Nationals, and we were battling out. He beat me in two games, but I think, you know, it was fairly close. I forgot to score. I could look back, but obviously at that time Kyle was a top player, and the owner of Engage, I think, was watching that match, and then he came up to me after, and that's how that worked out. So that was, and I don't know, confidence or whatever, that was just like really cool. Like I didn't know about sponsorships or like whatever, but he was like, hey, like, I mean, I'm pretty sure that's how that worked out. And then I was with Engage for like probably like 5 years. Like,
were you making content at that time? Did he know you from somewhere else, or was it just your encore performance?
No, yeah, no, it was just the perform. Yeah, it was just from that. So no, I did not. I don't think so. I have to look timeline, but no, I was not making.
But he saw your play on the court, and he was like, "This guy's legit. Let's get him on board."
Yeah, so that's how that started. And then, you know, players ask me this all the time, playing pro and stuff, and like, are you doing that right now? I would, you know, I dabble in it right now. Full time is for me is coaching, and you know, supporting a family. We have 3 little kids. Like that's kind of my main focus. But when there's pro tournaments in town, you know, I would love to. I just know, like you said, to train at that level is super high. But I kind of had my run, I would say, between like, now I gotta think about dates now. But you know, maybe 2016 to 2019, something like that. That's when I was traveling the U.S. Open, and you know, I played a lot of the good players. I mean, I played Ben several times. Talking about singles, Tyson, you know, had some pretty close ones with Ben actually. So yeah, I've known all these guys for a really long time, and then as I started that content creation, I was known from that too. So those are, you know, you asked me things I remember. I just remember those points.
Yeah.
You know, I was invited to an East versus West challenge. Like this was probably like 3 or 4 years ago. It's all on YouTube, but and I got to play with some really good players. I got that was like a not a lucky invitation, but that was I was in like the top 20 singles at that time, and then they were trying to, you know, invite all like the top guys, but I think so. Marcin Rispetsky, do you know who he is?
I know the name Marcin.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know that I've watched his game or anything.
All right. He's a legend of the game. This is when around the, we'll call it Kyle Yates, Daniel Moore era. Mm-hmm. You know, we're talking about singles. Yeah. But anyways, he's a really, really great player, but he couldn't make it to the event. And they were going down, you know, they were trying to get the top 10 players, but they were kind of going down the list.
So 17 picks later, they got to you.
Yeah. Or whatever. Yeah, right. Yeah. So anyways, so I got invited to that. And from that, I, you know, talking about experience wise, that was honestly probably, you can call it the peak. It was just fun. I mean, I got to play with Lindsey Newman, Deco Barr, actually, before he was like it was a team. It was actually similar to MLP, right? But it was, you know, obviously what it is today, MLP is just crazy awesome. Sure. Right. But it was the beginning stages of that. It was a East side versus West side. Tyson McGuffin was on the team. Joey Farias, Kyle Yates. Yeah. So all those guys were, Rob Cassidy and actually Michelle Escobar, they were all there. So that was really fun. So I got to, you know, during that time, just kind of hanging with the pros, felt really cool. You know, the Newmans, I got to know them really well. And then Rob and Michelle, those were some players that I hung out with there. So it was really cool.
Yeah, that's really, really interesting. You talked about, you know, someone seeing your on-court performance and then giving you a sponsorship from there.
Yeah.
Now we're both sponsored players in some capacity. When you're thinking about the people at home and they want to get sponsored, they want to go to tournaments and get it paid for, and they want their paddles for free.
Yeah.
How can someone do that? Like, what do you even begin to do to get a sponsorship? What does that look like?
Yeah, I think the sponsorship game has definitely changed over the years. So I've been in the game 8 years, right? And I think these companies that obviously just the growth of the game is night and day, right? So it was still grassroots sports then. I could still kind of see it, but now it's getting to like, this is a huge sport, right? But then all these paddle companies were fairly, I mean, because the size of the market was small, they're fairly small. So they would sponsor just higher level 4.0s, 4.5s. And then again, just contractually, like it's not like I was just getting paid like a heck of money or anything. I just, at that time, 5 years ago, a sponsorship with just free stuff.
Yeah.
You know, free paddles.
A couple paddles a year.
Or no, just, I mean, just even unlimited paddles. Oh. And then, you know, just unlimited like attire. Mm-hmm. Dude, that was like awesome. Like, okay. And then there were some entry fees paid. I mean, honestly, you look at Ben Johns and look at Tyson, all those guys. They didn't start to make the big bucks until fairly recently.
Yeah.
I mean, then, you know, companies weren't paying out tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of dollars. You know, it's really, really tight, really small. So sponsorship wise, unfortunately, if you're lower than 4 or 5, if you're lower than 5-0, actually, it's really hard, I would say, to get more sponsored today. Back then, it was a lot easier because, you know, if you're out there on the scene trying, you know, even if you're low level player, everyone's seeing your stuff and companies would just throw them out to you. But I never had this question before, but there are two things I do have in mind. If you are 5-0 and above, you know, maybe some recruit videos or things like that, or
you
have a better chance and you can kind of start to meet people, go to these tournaments, you know, you can meet some of the owners of these companies, things like that. But if you're lower than 5-0 and you're trying to get sponsorship, I still think it's possible. And I know a few people, this is why I know it's possible. But if you're just like, you can become a brand ambassador, right? Mm-hmm. So like that's a form of sponsorship. If you really like a company and you, let's say you're in your area and you like to run leagues, you're really friendly and you go here, there, sell paddles, whatever. If you're that kind of person, I think that's what companies are looking for. You know, if you have not a following, but just a big circle.
Yes.
Right. Where you're running a lot of stuff. I forgot the other one I was saying, but that's some place to start.
Yeah.
And then the second thing is newer paddle companies.
Oh yeah.
Okay. Really, so that's the second one.
Yeah.
So if you're like a 4-0 and you're trying to get sponsored by Yola, you know, it's going to be really tough. But there's so many new paddle companies on the scene. If you have a big circle, medium-sized circle, you can kind of tell them, look, I go here. I can, you know, a lot of people see me. I can have your product. Smaller companies are definitely, I would say, looking for that. And then once they get bigger, it's going to be, you know, it's probably going to, they're going to just get pros and get higher level.
Yeah.
But that's what I would start off.
Yeah. My answer is maybe a little biased, but it's, what do these paddle companies want? They want money. At the end of the day, they want money. How do they get money? Well, they want their paddles to sell. And to sell their paddles, you need influence. How do you get influence? Well, you need eyeballs on you.
Yeah.
And how do you get eyeballs on you? You just make dope content, man. Make dope content. So,
well, that's a way too, but everyone, yeah.
That's what I would say. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. For sure. Yeah. So just going back to the content creation, you mentioned Dude Perfect.
Yeah.
When I first like heard of you, Shay, and you know, even when I see you today, and you're trying to changing more entertainment value, but it was like kind of the trick shot thing.
Sure.
And I think a lot of people, follow you and know you from that. So it's just so crazy, seeing what Dude Perfect is today. You know, I'm sure you still follow him stuff like that. But like, you know, before they're just these guys in college probably started just making like cool stuff. And honestly, their stuff is so watchable. You can see now, I mean, they have like an enterprise now. I don't know if you've seen, they're building like a theme park.
Massive.
Yeah, yeah. Like create like stuff that no one, I mean, tens upon tens, maybe hundreds of million dollar company.
They have their own crews.
It's just crazy. And I'm sure back then, you know, there's some haters, there's people saying, what are you guys doing with your lives?
Wasting your time.
You'd
be so much better at pickleball if you spent this time practicing instead of hitting a ball at a cup.
Yeah. Or
get that one all the time.
Yeah. or, you know, just like whatever, a lot of negativity. And I'm sure as they've grown slowly, people are like, oh, okay. So anyways, do you feel any of that? Do you get any of that? Like, you know, what are you doing with your, I mean, it's so funny because even some of the, okay, just to be honest, I've even thought in a way like, oh man, this guy's like spending hours to get this.
Sometimes get this days, shot man, done. Days. Sometimes.
So like,
yeah.
What's the payoff there? Is it drive? Is it like I'm just trying to create the best content ever? And also, the last question is like, do you ever get that flack? Like, you know, what are you doing?
Oh, yeah.
If you could do something else.
Okay, so there's really, I guess, two answers here. Number one is like the way I spend my time now. I view it in three buckets.
Yeah.
Number one, does this get me better at pickleball? Number two, does this make me a better pickleball content creator?
Okay.
And then number three, am I meeting people or spending time with my family or like faith, religion? Or am I doing something that's going to like connect me with others around me?
That's awesome, man.
So if I'm not doing one of those three things, it's not worth my time.
Okay.
If I am doing one of those three things, it's okay. I don't mind that. And the other thing is in doing these trick shots,
yeah,
It is such an intense exercise on focus.
Okay. Because
the second you get unfocused,
yeah,
you're just wasting your time.
Wow.
Right? But you have to like be consistently giving yourself a chance of making it or you're just wasting your time. And so now when I'm thinking about how does that relate to pickleball,
yeah,
I'm in the middle of a dink rally. If I get unfocused for a second, I lose the point.
Yeah.
But now after doing these and having these intense exercises and literally hours at a time hitting the same shot over and over and over again, it translates very well to the court because now at a snap, I can go from nice point, man, to let's freaking go.
Dude.
Yeah.
Never looked at it that way.
Yeah. And that's, yeah, dude, I get hate all the time. It's just part of it. You know, it's whatever. For me, it's just I'm happy they're there. I'm happy they're watching. Happy they're engaging. And I think maybe one day they'll see the positivity. Who knows?
No, that's, dude, I've never thought of it that way. That's super good, man.
I mean, it takes discipline. It really does. Yeah. And I wish I had more discipline in other areas of my life. But, you know, when I think about going to the gym now,
mm-hmm,
is going to the gym harder than spending 8 hours on the court hitting a ball at a cup? Probably not. Yeah. You know, so it's like doing these things that really suck. Like, I don't want to do it.
Yeah.
Knowing that, you know, I might get paid from it because it's my job. And I found a way to monetize that suck, that discipline. Yeah. It's kind of cool. But, I mean, it's just an intense exercise. And how focused can I be for an extended period of time?
No, that's awesome. Yeah, speaking of trick shots, let's talk about your favorite one, just the one that you're just super proud of.
Yeah.
your most proud of trick shot. And then let's talk about the ones that took you the most time and the least amount of time or attempts.
Yes. Okay, so the one that took me most proud of is definitely the skewer.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was the first one, and it was...
Okay. So that was the first one ever?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. It was the first one I ever actually published. And what was interesting is it got 1 million views, but it did not get 1 million views day one. So what happened was I went out, I tried it for 2 hours. I didn't get it. I was like, all right, I've got to go do this thing. I went out the next day, tried it again for like 6 hours, didn't get it.
Oh, wow.
Next day, 6 hours, didn't get it.
So 14 hours in.
Haven't made it. I made 3 videos and they're they're getting like 5,000 views each. So I'm just at this point, it's like, all right, I've put so much time into this. I got to get this done.
Okay. So 6 hours, day three, then what?
Yeah. Okay. So day four comes around and I make it. I finally make it, but it took me like another 4 hours. So
six, we're 12,
it's like 18 hours.
18.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. And then after that happened, I finally made it. Then the first video took off and got 1 million.
Yeah.
So I didn't do it because it was getting views. I did it because
I
got to do this,
it.
Man. Like something clicked in my brain like that. This is my life now. I hit pickleballs at skewers until I make it.
Wow. And
after that, I don't know what's going to happen.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's the one I'm most proud of because it was just, I persevered in something so stupid and meaningless as hitting a pickleball. And then, yeah.
Dude, I love that mindset. Honestly, you look at Dude Perfect and what they are today. They probably had the same exact mindset as that.
Sure, man. Yeah. Yeah.
That's actually true dedication. That's awesome.
Yeah.
So that was your most memorable or favorite one. Now, like, let's talk about, so attempts, like how many times you try or the time, like what's the longest it take you or most attempts and the shortest.
Dude, so I would have to look back at the numbers, but since then I did this one where, okay, what I did was I hit a third shot drop from the baseline.
Okay.
Over a net, it hit off of a spike ball net, bounced onto a bucket.
So third shot drop onto a spike ball net.
Onto a spike ball net.
Okay.
From the spike ball net, it bounced, hit the bucket.
Hit the bucket, like the bucket's inverted, right?
Yeah, yeah.
The
top upside down. Yeah, and then it bounced into a cup.
Into a like a red Dixie cup?
It's something similar, yeah. It was like a plastic tumbler, something like that. Okay, right. So this thing... What I found is that when you add levels of variableness to these trick shots, like the spike ball net, it doesn't bounce the same every time, depending where you hit it. Dude. This bucket, it has like a little ring in the middle. And if you hit that ring, it goes left, right?
Of course.
So this thing, I think I had 7 or 8 friends try it with me over the course of maybe 2 weeks.
So you guys are out there working full time, like taking turns.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so, you know, I get my friends to come out and do it with me. We just catch up because we're there for hours and you're just having a good time.
Oh my gosh.
I would have to look back, but I have it on TikTok and Instagram and everywhere else. I think it was over 20,000 attempts.
20,000. Okay, and you landed it.
Yeah.
Who did? You or your friend?
I got it.
Yeah. Okay, so 20,000 attempts, but you don't know the hour wise.
It was like 20, 30, something like that.
Oh my gosh, dude.
Yeah. And that video, I mean, it didn't do great. Oh. It got hundreds of thousands, but in grand scheme of things, it didn't make me a ton of money, but it was like,
huh,
this is cool. I got to connect with all my friends and practice a lot of third shot drops. So,
dude, that's,
yeah, it was worth it.
Wow. That's, man, that's dedication. That's cool, man. So what about the shortest time or least attempts?
Least attempts.
Or you don't do anything that's that easy.
Yeah, I don't do those easy ones. No, I've had some. Ooh. I mean, so recently I tried this thing where I did a live stream on TikTok. And what I did was I had 5 levels of trick shots. And each level got much harder.
Yeah.
But for every 5,000 likes that I got on the live stream, I had to go back a level.
Ooh.
Yeah.
That's
it's a cool concept, right?
Do people do that? That's a freaking, that's smart, dude.
Yeah. Well, I did it and I would like to do it more, but it just, I don't know. Yeah.
I mean, I'm thinking about YouTube. Like, oh man, I could live stream and do something like
that. Yeah, definitely. I just learned this word from Thomas Shields from the Dink the other day, but I definitely suffer from shiny object syndrome where it's, oh, dude, this is such a good concept. Let's do it. And I get into it and I do it and I don't think about the ramifications for like my business or, you know, how does this make me money? So like, you know, doing that live stream, like, yeah, it was sick. It was a good time. But in the grand scheme of things, it just probably wasn't worth it.
Got it.
Monetarily or worth my time. I could be doing something better.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of fun though. But yeah. So and basically to answer your question in that there was this, I had to like, I don't even know what I did. Just put a ball into a cup maybe. Did it like first try. So. Okay. Sometimes it takes like one or two tries.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool, man. Yeah. So no, that's super awesome. So trick shots. And also let's talk about the other side of your kind of entertainment, but road to pro. What is your goal? Like I run these 2-day intensives right now.
Yeah.
And I'm, you know, people come and train with me. One of the things that I asked them, what's your goals for 2023?
Yeah.
So if I could ask you that question.
Mm-hmm.
Like pickleball wise, like not your content or anything like that, but as a player.
Yeah. Okay. So when you say what's your goal for 2023, I look at it a different way. Okay. So I don't do it by year. Yeah. I do it by my age. So my birthday is early February.
Okay.
So February 6th, every year I sit down and I write out all my goals for that year.
Yeah. So February 6th. Oh, that's
a couple days.
A few days here.
Yeah. So what I did is, you know, I have like these life goals, right? These big things I want to do. One of them is like give away a house, for example.
Yeah.
I just want to do that. And so what I do is every year I look at those life goals.
Is Mr. Beast, by the way, one of your inspirations?
I love that guy.
Okay. Man. I was going to say, dude.
That's just the epitome of like using your influence for positivity.
I love Mr. Beast.
His most recent video, I cured 1,000 people's blindness. Like he went from making YouTube videos to like doing cataract surgery on people.
I haven't seen that. Oh, so he paid for people's surgeries.
Cataract surgeries, yeah, cure their blindness.
That is a good thumbnail.
Yeah, I mean, the dude crushes it. And it's just pure positivity all the time.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, so February 6th, I sit down, look at my life goals, see how that translates to five-year goals. How does that translate to this year's goals?
Yeah.
How does that translate to monthly goals? And then finally, what do I do today?
Yeah.
And so for my pickleball goals, it's less of like, I don't set goals of like be number one. I set goals of spend time doing this every day. Spend 7 hours a day. Spend 7 days a week doing something to get better at pickleball.
Yeah, that's a great way to look at it. Yep.
Yeah. So, and I think it's silly to think of like, I want to be number one, because what if you get to number one and you still have 20% more to give? It should become, I want to be the best possible version of myself at pickleball. Yeah. And maybe when I'm there, I'm still an arm's length away from, you know, Ben Johns and Riley Newman, or maybe I'm way better than them. I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, it'd probably be silly to think I would be better than them, but I just don't want to limit myself. And so to not limit myself, instead, what I do is I say, I want to spend this many hours a day doing this.
Yeah.
And so I have this app called Way of Life, and I track all my habits on there.
Okay.
So every single day I have like, you know, one of the things like take a cold shower in the morning. Do I do that today? Like if I do that today, then I'm going to do this today.
Yeah.
And I have like, you know, spend at least 2 minutes just working on a YouTube video.
Yeah.
That's it. Post a short.
Dude.
Check.
That's actually interesting. No, I have a very, very similar app just called Habits, Habit Tracker. So I've been doing, that's one of the things I've been doing.
Yeah.
So, like positive. One of the things I learned is, you know, just tracking habits, tracking those kinds of things you know, if I, like exactly what you're saying, if I'm trying to be, or if my, you know, sometimes if you're just looking at the goal, just exclusively, if you're looking at the goal by itself, you know what I mean? And you're trying to get there, you know, it's all the habits, the time that you put into that actually helps you achieve it. Right?
Definitely.
So like, even like players that are trying to get better, like, oh, I'm just trying to get here. So obviously we backtrack. What are the, how much time drilling do you need to put on court? Like how many times do you have to, you know, how do you have to eat? How do you have to do all these things? So
yeah,
no, that's a great way to look
it's
at
like
it.
It's like share the progress, not the goal. Like focus on the progress, not the goal, and you'll get there no matter what.
Yeah.
I got to get going. Go in the orchard. Kyle's outside waiting on me.
Yeah, no problem. But yeah, Shay, thanks for the time, man. I know you got other things going on today. I really appreciate it. How can, just real quick, how can people find you?
Yeah, super simple. Any platform you're on, just type in Shay, S-H-E-A, Underwood. You'll find me somewhere, I'm sure.
Yeah.
You'll figure it out. If you want to find me good enough, like you'll find me.
Okay.
Yeah.
Shay, appreciate it, man. And hope to have you back. And I'm excited to see your journey as a pro. And also keep those trick shots coming. Keep the positivity coming. And yeah, man, I'm excited for your channel. So
I appreciate you, man. Hey, one more thing. Make sure you subscribe to Brianna's Pickleball.
Let's go.
You better.
All right. See you guys in the next one.
See you guys.